It's time for the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast, answering your questions from the General's Quarters every week, right here on VolQuest.
Hey, good Tuesday morning, everybody. Welcome into the VolQuest Podcast. I am Eric Kane, alongside Rob Lewis, Brent Hubbs, and Austin Price. The Exterior Home Solutions VolQuest Podcast. They've been local and trusted since 1999. That is Exterior Home Solutions. If you have any roofing, if you have a need for roofing, siding, windows, or a garage, you can contact them today by dialing this number. You can get a free estimate at 865-524-5888 or check them out online at exteriorhomesolutions.com. Tennessee is 4-0 entering the first bye week of the year. Two ranked wins, two wins away from Neyland Stadium, one win in the SEC, off to a good start. And of course, that's happened with a 25-15 win on the road at Oklahoma. Austin, a couple of nights here to digest what we saw on Saturday nights. It was a different type of game from an offensive perspective, but that defense travels, and it was playing really, really good football the other night once again.
Yeah, it does. You know, the defense does travel, and you know they did just enough on the ground. Kind of got it going a little bit when they needed to. Took a few deep shots, were able to connect. Did enough on offense, and then defensively really dominated Oklahoma. I mean, Oklahoma ends up with a little over 200 yards total offense, but they had, you know, less than 100, you know, in the fourth quarter. And then again, we talked about it on the postgame pod. You know, Tennessee, I thought, got cute with their substitutions and put too many young kids out there in one collective unit, and Oklahoma made some plays. And you know, I think if Tennessee sticks with their starters, or as Brent even said to me afterwards, if Dominic Bailey doesn't get that, you know, personal foul penalty, you know, and Tennessee's able to bring the starters back in 15 yards sooner, does Oklahoma score? I mean, because, I mean, Oklahoma's offense did nothing all night. Jackson Boy was a monster. Tyree West continues to look like a kid that's you know, growing up before our eyes. And, you know, you just have to like what Tennessee's doing defensively. And that's what James Pierce – wreaking havoc, but not wreaking havoc in terms of stats. He just draws so much attention.
Yeah, I thought Tennessee, obviously, you know, Oklahoma couldn't run the football. Tennessee forced Jackson Arnold out of the football game, had Oklahoma making a quarterback change late in the second quarter. As Austin pointed out, Rob, Tennessee held him to under 100 yards late in that football game. Tennessee forced three turnovers, two turnovers on down, seven punts. It was kind of a clinic there for Tennessee. And, you know, the game, you know, ended up being a 10-point win, 25-15, where Tennessee still covers on the road in an SEC ball game. You know, the score seems like it's a little closer than what it was. This game was not close. It felt like Tennessee controlled it throughout, Rob.
Yeah, man, I don't see how anybody watched it. It felt different. I mean, I get that some people, you know, feel like Coach Heupel got a little conservative too early, but man, I mean, he got that way because he could. I mean, because of his defense. And I was impressed with Tennessee. You know, I know the numbers aren't great, but man, the physicality, but they looked, I mean, they really, you know, we talk about the eye test a lot. I mean, Tennessee passed the eye test for what I think you're supposed to look like as a team with legitimate SEC.
That passes the eye test. Jeez.
You didn't like it?
Yeah, no doubt about it. And
no, I'm saying that passes the eye test.
Oh, you're talking Elijah?
Yeah.
But I mean, the big hits. I mean, it looked like a team that, you know, could. I'm not saying they'll beat Georgia or Alabama, but they look like a team that belongs in a conversation.
Brent, when you look at a win like this and look at the way Tennessee's defense played, you know, what's, and I know we'll talk about the bye week here coming up, but it just kind of, Tennessee continues to check those boxes. And I didn't think that, you know, pre-snap penalties, I think they had one in the football game, one false start, but certainly handled the elements well. You know, from an operational standpoint, Tennessee did, you know, had tempo at times, especially on that drive with Dylan Sampson before the half. It just felt like, again, you know, dominating defensively. And sure, there were some shortcomings offensively and on the offensive line, but it just felt like Tennessee had complete control of this game the entire time.
Well, they did. I mean, I thought, you know, Tennessee did all the things that they needed to do in terms of an operational standpoint. As you mentioned, no pre-step penalties. There was nothing about any moment that seemed, you know, necessarily too big. I was a little surprised to hear, you know, the Oklahoma fan base talk about that's the loudest that stadium's been. I'm not saying that it's a bad venue, but, I mean, it's Athens, Georgia, and places like that. I mean, there's no comparison from a volume standpoint. of what you get in Norman, Oklahoma, compared to other venues in the SEC. So I would have been really disappointed if Tennessee had had a bunch of pre-snap penalties. But I thought Nico was in control. I think the story for this team moving forward is if they're going to be – I think we all believe that they're elite defensively if they stay healthy. With all the bodies they can rotate up front, if they can stay healthy at linebacker, they have a chance to be very elite defensively. All the stats bear that out. Will they play better offenses moving forward? Absolutely. Oklahoma's got a lot of offensive issues. We've seen NC State. They have all kinds of offensive issues. So I think that the question becomes, can they protect Nico for them to be at their best? They've got to get ground, you know, be able to run the football and get the play action game going. So they've got to figure out what are they at offensive tackle? What does that look like moving forward? But to go in and get that win, that was a needed win for your playoff hopes, because it's one less game you can potentially lose, right? So you're knocking down numbers. And so now you got to go get ready to go take on Arkansas. You can't slip up there. And then it gets into that home slate where it gets really interesting and really good for Tennessee.
You look at the ESPN Football Power Index, and AP referenced this after the game on Saturday night. Tennessee now an 80.6% chance of making the playoffs, which goes up about 20% after this win. And you're right, this is one of those games you circle on the calendar saying, okay, if you want to be a playoff team, you know, this is one of the three or four games that matter the most. And so you handle business here, you check it off. Theoretically, you're looking at that schedule. We all know Alabama's coming to Neyland Stadium. We know Tennessee's on the road to Georgia. Can't afford to slip up other places, Kentucky, Florida, and whatnot. But, you know, Austin, this was a huge win for Tennessee. It was a win on the road. In a win, we talked about it ad nauseum. You know, it was big for Josh Heupel. We saw the post game, you know, comments from him getting choked up a little bit, talking about his team, talking about his mother. It was just one of those games where it meant an awful lot for, you know, Josh Heupel personally, this team personally, and also when looking ahead to what you want to accomplish down the line in this football season.
No doubt about it. I mean, when you think about it, Eric, the first four games is kind of the first third, but then you have this nice, but the way the schedule is structured is really nice. And so I think that there was excitement that they were able to get this win and kind of chalk off the first third undefeated. It's kind of like hitting little benchmarks, right? Like we want to play the next, you know, three or four holes, you know, two under. We want to play them even. We want whatever. Like, you know, it's the same thing in football here. You want to play this set of games 4-0. Boom. All right. Now you're at Arkansas. It's not a gimme, but you have to like this, you know, as the fact that the defense travels, you know, and then you're home for that, as Hub said, that huge home slate. If Tennessee wins at Arkansas, then KD bar the door, because I know Hubs has got to see it to believe it and all that. I know that's more on the road, more so at home. But at the same time, Tennessee's undefeated, and that game's at night at Neyland Stadium. That Florida team ain't coming in here and winning. So, like, at that point, it comes down to, you know, what do you do against Bama? What do you do against Georgia? Because they're not losing any of the others.
Got a bye week coming up right now, obviously, so no game on Saturday. Rob, when you look at this team, you know, what are some things this team needs to try to accomplish over the bye week? You need to get healthy. You need to make sure Lance Hurts ready to go for Arkansas. You need to let John Campbell kind of get back to where he needs to be. You know, Brent mentioned on the podcast last night or on the Sunday Night Rewind that, you know, it's a good chance to rep some of these young offensive tackles so you continue to be ready if you're ever in a situation like you were in Norman with a couple of backup tackles out there. Jonathan Wade on the Rewind said they need to be preaching turnovers defensively. If you're Tennessee, Rob, kind of what's your mindset here in the bye week with no game on Saturday?
I mean, get healthy. Like Hubbard said, I mean, you referenced it already. Figure out what you're going to do at tackle. Is that as simple as getting healthy? Is Lance Hurd, you know, need a week off, 2 weeks? I mean, how much does that help with John Campbell? I mean, that kind of looks like a situation you're going to have to manage all year. But I don't want to be pessimistic, but I mean, Brent, you had the note, but he's not played more than 40 snaps in a game yet. I mean, some of that, you know, I'm sure was dictated by score, but, you know, also as you move towards October, that's not a great stat. So, you know, definitely figure out there. I mean, who, you know, can any of those young kids help you? Because EC, you're right. I mean, that was an emergency situation, you know, in Norman, you know, Saturday. And, you know, just sidebar, that I think that Oklahoma defense was better than I thought they were good. I think they were maybe a little better than I gave them credit for going in. I thought they were really nice. But, yeah, just figure out what you're good at the offensive line. Cause I, you know, think we all maybe got a false sense of security those first 3 weeks just because of the numbers, even though everybody kept saying, you know, it's schedule, you got to look at the schedule, but you know, get more sound there. I mean, defensively, I don't know. I mean, maybe figure out how deep you're going to be in the secondary, but I don't have a lot of notes on that side of the ball after four games.
Look at certain position groups now, kind of at the third way marker of the season. Is Tennessee better or worse than you thought at certain positions? Like, let's go at linebacker, Brent. Is Tennessee better at linebacker as a group than you thought it was going to be during the season, knowing that they were going to get a lift with a healthy Keenan Peely?
Yeah, I'm going to give Austin credit here. Austin called his shot on that one in the preseason. He thought that linebacker group would take a big leap, and they certainly have. I mean, Peely's playing really well right now, and Arian Carter, where Arian Carter is, where he was in the Oklahoma game, and I know he had the two personal foul penalties, which was really unfortunate because both of them were just effort plays. Where he is now compared to where he was to start the year, I mean, that guy's getting better and better every week. So they're definitely better, more productive and better than I thought they would be at linebacker. And I thought they would be good there, but they've been really good there. And you got a defensive line that helps that. But the instincts that that group is playing with at the second level defensively right now is pretty impressive.
What about in the back end at safety, Austin? We've seen Tim Banks make it a point. I mean, he is rotating a lot this year compared to where you didn't rotate at all the first three seasons. You got Will Brooks. You got Andre Turrentine. Jacoby Thomas plays. Christian Charles played a lot this past week. Idris Farouk and John Slaughter have played over 40 defensive snaps already this year, and I understand some of those blowouts. Who helped you? Of course, you know that those top three are going to play, but in the Farouk, Charles, Slaughter conversation, who's above or below the line right here at the third way marker?
It's obviously Christian Charles. I mean, like, he played a lot on Saturday night, you know, compared to the last few games. He's got that shoulder kind of, you know, harnessed up there. And, you know, obviously, you know, he's going through something, but he kind of gutted through it the other night. So I think that the staff, Coach Banks, they trust him more than some of the younger guys at this point. And so I think you'll continue to see that the top three rotate. And then after that, I would say Charles and then probably Farouk. I think, as Hubs has pointed out, it feels like John Slaughter is you know, a bit behind the rest.
I'll be curious to see where they are with Farouk home game versus road game.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, as to how much that they go there. Was that listen, we need to rotate. The way we lose this game is if we give up a big play. So we don't want to take a chance on him being super aggressive and busting down the middle of the field or doing something crazy like that. So we're going to be cautious there and go with a little more of a safe route. I'm curious to see what Farouk can do, moving forward, with his open date and kind of where that competition's at. Cause I don't know how durable Charles can be with that shoulder. Give him props for harnessing it up and going to play. Cause I think he's just going to try to withstand it all the way through. But I think you got to continue to push Farouk there to where he's with Christian Charles. If that shoulder flares up for Christian Charles.
When you talk about home versus away, wouldn't it make, like, for a defensive guy, it feels like a way would be better because they could actually communicate more because it's not loud when the opposing team's on offense.
Yeah, I just think away games, I mean, it's easier to get caught up in just kind of all of it. Whereas Maybe in home games you can, you know, it's a little more comfortable because you've played there. Yeah, you're right. It's louder. Communication should be easier. But I just wonder if you're a little more comfortable with a home game versus an away game. Now, again, I think the biggest reason, and it was the smart choice by this coaching staff to go with Charles there, is how do you lose that game, right? You lose that game because you bust a guy down, you let a guy go down the seam and they throw a 60-yard touchdown pass, right? Or you miss a tackle and it becomes a huge chunk play. You know, Oklahoma was going to have a hard time with the time left on the clock and the score where it was, driving the length of the field three or four times to tie that football game up. Tennessee knew it. That's why they got a little soft on defense, because they just didn't want to give anything up. And I don't think they wanted to take a chance in the back end, knowing Tim Banks' nature, right? Let's go back to the last couple of years. Who were the last group that they rotated out of the game? Typically, it was the safeties because they didn't want to give up a big play. So I think he went with the most experienced guys there for that purpose, even though in front of those safeties, they were rotating pretty heavily. And I think that allowed Oklahoma to get in a rhythm because of that. But they did not want to give up a big play on the back end.
Flip it over to the offensive side again, a third of the way through the season. I think it's all pretty obvious right now that Deshaun Bishop is RB2. He's earned that. He's played. He's performed well. Again, I credit him for jump-starting the run game in that tough game against Oklahoma there where yards were few and far between, hardly any, seven to be exact, in that first quarter on the road. I want to ask about Nico here in a moment, but the tight end, Rob, when you look at the individual snap counts, I know they've gone some 12 personnel and they prefer Kitzelman and stays in there more, but you look through the first four games and the snap counts for Kitzelman's 144, for Stays is like 121, and then for Ethan Davis is at 66 snaps so far this season. That's a little bit surprising to me. I mean, I notice it in real time, but when you see it on paper, that the Davis, the snap differential is much less than the other two.
I mean, I think that just shows you what Coach Heupel values at that position is, you know, in terms of physicality. If you look at, you know, interestingly, I don't know about the total targets, but I think the targets are pretty close. I know, you know, as far as receptions, everybody went into that with, you know, pretty much the same numbers. So I think it's, you know, a personnel grouping deal about, you know, when they're going heavy. And I think that, or we've talked about it a lot. I'm not breaking any new ground, but that, you know, the two tight stuff, like you mentioned, EC has really added a dimension to them. And I mean, I know they didn't have a ton of success with it, but just the way they're able to get into it and slog in that game, you know, Saturday night, that's not an element that they were able to do. I mean, Coach Heupel called 24 pass play or 24 run plays in that second half compared to 10. I think they threw 10 passes. I believe that's the right ratio. I looked it up and, you know, it wasn't, you know, they kicked six field goals, but I mean, the point being they were able to win that game and that's what it took. And man, you know, I got sidetracked a little bit, but the two tight ends are part of it, Eric. And it's, you know, so I'm not surprised since we've seen them at NC State, I'm not surprised the reps are what they are, but you know, in August, yeah, I thought Ethan Davis probably would have had a lot more.
I'll tell you one group I'd like to talk about. They're a little better than I thought they were going to be. And it's not even a group. It's just one player. Max Gilbert is way better than I thought he was going to be. Like, I thought he was going to be good, right? But, I mean, that kid has got a missile for a leg. And, like, he's just unaffected by road, home, neutral site. Like, I mean, you talk about confidence. So, like, when you put, you know, Jackson Ross, really good. Turbofill is a stud. I know I gave him stock down on the just because we were looking for something after 71-0 last week, and he kicked that one out of bounds. But he kicked them all to Tulsa the other night, and then Max Gilbert. I mean, 3 for 3 in a road situation. You know, I mean, like Coach Apple's like, all right, we'll bring you up. We're up 13. We'll try to go up 16. Boom. You know, like, you know, I mean, just nothing. So I think they're better at place kicker than I ever thought they would be. Again, I didn't think they'd be bad. But I didn't think that a redshirt freshman would be this good this quick.
It was just such an unknown because
you never see it. You're not there. You don't see it. They kick indoors when we're at practice, even for the little bit we're out there. So, I mean.
Yeah, he had never attempted one in a game. But right now, to your point, and I'm glad you brought that up, Max Gilbert's second in field goals made in the SEC with 10. He is second in scoring in the Southeastern Conference, only trailing his teammate Dylan Sampson, who was responsible for 60 points to Max Gilbert's 54 points. I think Gilbert's been good. And this is kind of, you know, Rob actually made me think about this. You know, it's kind of obvious, but, and you never want him to be the MVP of a game. I'm not saying he was the other day, but I mean, what Jackson Ross did in that game against Oklahoma, and he joked on social media earlier in the week that being the punter at Tennessee is boring. Thanks, Nico, and kind of laughing. But I mean, he had three punts that sailed over 50 yards, two punts inside the 20. One should have had one more if Tennessee got down there and fielded that before winning.
You're
the
right
end
about
zone.
That one.
His 57 yard punt, coupled with a false start that moved to half the distance of the goal, really contributed to the safety for Jason Jenkins. Again, you never want to be talking about a punter, but Jackson Ross was huge in that game against Oklahoma when you're playing Neyland-style football, right? When you're playing maximum football, protect your lead, run the football, protect your quarterback, play field position, Brent, I thought on that note with Max Gilbert, I thought Jackson Ross was phenomenal the other night.
Yeah, I mean, that punt, that sequence to lead to the safety was just a gut-wrencher for Oklahoma. I mean, that's a – I guess in theory that's a 9-point swing. But, I mean, you've got first and goal inside your five or inside the 10. You're going to go score there. They get the fumble. Tennessee moves it out enough to where Jackson Ross can go to work. And then all of a sudden the next time the defense is on the field, it's a safety because they were able to flip the field the way they were. That was a huge sequence in that football game. Because you're talking about keeping your crowd in it. You're talking about getting going, here's Tennessee. You know, how are you going to handle adversity, right? So what does that look like if it's good, if it's a tie game there? The defense didn't allow it to happen, and they were able to flip the field. I thought that sequence was a very critical sequence, you know, in the football game. So I'm with you guys on those specialists. I mean, I think they've done well. You talk about things to fix in the open date and look at. I think one of the things that Tennessee's got to improve on and be better at is they've got to finish in the red zone better. Here we are back with the red zone question, right? I mean, you get the big play to Brew McCoy. You got first and goal at the 10, and I know there's the whole Herb Street diatribe on DeJon Terry, you know, taking a dive there with the injury or whatever. Listen, that happens all the time to Tennessee. That can't be what affects you in the red zone. Like, you can't say, well, we didn't get a touchdown because we couldn't go tempo there because of what they did on the injury front. Tennessee has worked too hard and put too much effort in red zone offense to go down there, particularly that early in the game. You make a big splash play, you got to finish that drive. I mean, you look at the next one, the next deep ball to Brew McCoy. Where does that drive end? Ends in a field goal. You got to turn those splash plays into touchdowns. And when you're first and goal at the 10, you don't need to be settling for field goals. That was a bugaboo for Tennessee a year ago. They should be better in the red zone. They've got to be better in the red zone moving forward here and finish drives.
Kind of on that note, before we welcome in On Three's Ari Wasserman here in just a moment, a third of the way through the season, Rob, is Nico been who you thought he's been? He's not been perfect, of course. You talk about red zone struggles, had some turnovers here, but overall, I've been pretty pleased. I have not been let down from Nico Iamaleava.
I think he's exactly who I thought he was going to be, and that's, you know, an eventual Heisman Trophy finalist, maybe top pick in the draft. Man, I think he's been great, and I think the great thing about this team is, I mean, I don't think Coach Heupel has had to put too much on him. I mean, even in that game against Oklahoma, which, you know, big test, you know, your first big early test of the season, I mean, that game wasn't on Nico. I mean, he had to make some plays, but it wasn't on his shoulders because of the defense, because of the ground game. I think it's really been the team, the schedule, it is set up great for bringing Nico along, developed him, and, you know, with Coach Heupel just not having to ask him to be Superman. And when he does need to make a play, I mean, my God, I mean, some of those throws the other night that he ripped across the middle, I mean, I know we've talked about it, but just the way he was, I mean, did Dante Thornton break stride on the 66-yarder?
No, at all.
I mean, and not only was it perfectly placed, I mean, it was a heater. And, you know, it just, you know, there were only maybe four throws of those in the game. But how big of a difference was that, and that Tennessee's quarterback could make those throws, and Oklahoma's guy had no chance?
He really benefited from the fact that safety was sprinting downhill for the run as well. They probably thought he had to put a little bit of velo on there to get it over there in a hurry. But
and before speaking of Dante Thornton, I mean, give that guy a shout out for the first four games after, you know, so many people wanted, you know, were ready to ship him out.
Well, yeah. And here's the thing on Nico, just sitting here looking at it. Middle of the field, throws that travel in the air 20 yards plus, he's 2 of 3 for the year. 10 yards plus, he's 7 of 14 in the middle of the field. 0 to 10 yards, he's 13 of 13. And I guess screens behind the line of scrimmage, he's considered 11 of 11. The fact that the middle of the field is back into play for Tennessee, if they can protect a little bit, you're talking about play action safeties, picking on safeties, you're starting to have the potential to do some of the things you did in 22 with the middle of the football field if they can clean up some of their protection issues, because they can stress between the hashes in such a way because of what Nico's able to do from an accuracy standpoint.
So far, so good. In fact, it's been elite in certain statistical categories for Tennessee through the first four games of the year. 4-0, 1-0 in SEC play, bye week this week, then back on the road in Fayetteville, Arkansas next weekend for the Tennessee Volunteers. We'll have Ari Wasserman of On3 come and join us. He was in-house. We'll get his thoughts on Tennessee, Oklahoma, and Tennessee through the first third of the season here in just one moment. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at the Game Time app. You download this Game Time app right now, put in the promo code On3, and you're going to get $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Download that app or go to GameTime.co, put in the promo code On3, $20 off your first purchase. What is Game Time? Well, there was a pretty big concert over at Neyland Stadium. In fact, there were two concerts this past weekend, and a lot of those people that went to those concerts bought those tickets on the Game Time app. But you can do concerts, comedy shows, baseball games, football games at Neyland, at Food City Center, at Lindsey Nelson, downtown ballpark for the Smokies here coming up next week. You can buy tickets to events in your area, regardless if it's sporting or entertainment, on the Game Time app. And it's, you see it right now if you're watching this here on the website. Super friendly, easy to use website. And again, when you go over there, put in that promo code On3 for $20 off your first purchase. Game Time picks, lowest price guaranteed, seat views, all in pricing, all that and more is over on the Game Time app. Put in that promo code On3, promo code On3 for $20 off over at the Game Time app. Terms apply. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. And as always, want to give a shout out to our friends over at Exterior Home Solutions.
Hey, Sterling, man, come on. We got a roof to replace.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.
Hey, Sterling, you ready to go to the top?
Man, I can't believe you guys been doing this for 25 years. Oh, baby.
Now, this is what I call a rooftop party.
We have 25 years experience in roofing and exterior renovations, and we're backed by the best.
Are you ready to get your rooftop party started? Give us a call, 865-524-5888.
Hey, I want to welcome onto the show Ari Wasserman, On3 personality. He and Andy Staples are live on the On3 YouTube channel Monday through Thursday at 9:30 Eastern Time. You can go ahead and check that out. Great content during this college football season every single day, and there's a lot to talk about. Ari, you were in-house, the Palace on the Prairie, watching Tennessee and Oklahoma. Austin, you said you didn't know they called it that, and then since you said that, I've looked everywhere, and there's Palace references everywhere around Oklahoma.
I know, man, but like when I put in the Uber to where to go, and they give you like the Gaylord family, you know, Memorial Stadium or whatever, you don't put in the Uber Palace on the Prairie. So then when you started talking about it, it just kind of got me tickled because
Ari, what were your big takeaways there Saturday nights from Tennessee, Oklahoma? Obviously, a big win for Tennessee, unorthodox in some ways, but that defense still the story.
Yeah, I came into the game on high alert, like I was drinking Tennessee Kool-Aid before the game, and I know that we made a lot of Josh Heupel's return and what this meant for him personally, and that seemed to be a lot of the story after the game. But the column that I wrote was that it was nice to see him go to his alma mater where he won a national title and get it done. But I think the reason why, you know, he wasn't overly celebratory about like his, you know, return or his vengeance or however you want to look at it is that this team has so much more potential than going out and beating an Oklahoma team on the road that might lose four or five games this year. I think this team is a bona fide playoff team. I think this is a team that could win playoff games, and I legitimately think this is a team that could win the national title. So I don't know if that's what's going to happen. You know, obviously they still have to play Alabama and Georgia. We're going to get more context of what this team looks like when they're facing the monsters of the conference. But from a prediction standpoint, the thing that impressed me the most in the game, guys, was that they are able to beat you in different ways. 2 years ago, when it was Hendon Hooker and Jalin Hyatt, and they were throwing a ball downfield, like they got mauled. They got absolutely mauled by Georgia. This year, I think they can line up. They can run it with Dylan Sampson. They can throw it with Nico and their Brew McCoy and their great receivers. But they are versatile in their sets. They can line up five wide. They can put two tight ends on the field. Like, I really like the physicality of their defense. James Pierce is an animal. Like, I am. Can you tell that, like, I'm excited about this team? Like, I, like, legitimately think that they're not getting enough credit. I have them top four in my poll. I'm all in on the Volunteers so far this year.
How concerned are you when you look at Tennessee just from a standpoint of the tackle situation? Because the other night, I mean, they had to go into that shell the way they did because They just didn't feel like they could protect number eight, right? So, like,
yeah,
how worried are you? Like, because I mean, like against Arkansas, I'm not sure you can beat Arkansas without John Campbell and Lance Hurd, but to beat Alabama, to beat Georgia, I mean, those guys got to be back and playing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, whenever you're missing offensive linemen, it's a problem. And actually, I think that Oklahoma, we might find out at the end of the year, has one of the nastiest defenses in the SEC. I thought their defense played incredible. And honestly, a lot of the story, and I probably still have to write about this a little bit, is I'm kind of dumbfounded by what's going on with their offense. And it kind of feels like it's like the opposite problem that they had when Lincoln Riley was there, where they have a really, really good defense and their offense can't really do anything. And benching their quarterback the way they did was kind of mind-blowing to me. Maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention going into it. But are those guys going to be returning this year? Help me out here. Like, Lance Hurd's going to play again, right?
Oh, yeah, they'll both be back. It's just
– yeah. Yeah,
chronic knee with Campbell, yeah. And then Hurd at an ankle.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, you have to keep tabs on it, but hopefully they'll both be playing for their first huge test of the year. They play Georgia on November 16th, so I think they play Alabama first. So, Alabama's October 19th. If they're back, I don't think they're going to have any issues beating the two teams that are next on their schedule without them. I think that Florida and Arkansas, I think Arkansas is a little bit better than people think, but I think they're going to get wins in both of those and we're going to be undefeated going into the Alabama game.
Ari, the talk about this team, obviously all offseason is the offense and Nico and Heupel and all that, and it's still got potential to be really good. It's really good in certain areas, especially the run game right now. Defensively, you know, we all thought that the defense would take a step and be better. I don't think that we expected it to be this dominant out of the gate. Now, recognizing that they have not played a really, really good offense yet, Oklahoma's offense clearly not good, mm-hmm. NC State's offense clearly not good, then you had a couple cupcakes. So there's going to be some offenses on the schedule that's going to stress them for sure. But is this defense, you saw it in person, you saw how it starts up front with the defensive line and then carries back with the linebackers and DBs, is this defense even better than you thought? And I mean, it could be and it can continue to be an absolute strength for this football team, you know, going down the season.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Oklahoma could not block them. You know what I mean? And Oklahoma doesn't have bad athletes on their team. They could not block them. So if your defensive line is going to disrupt games the way they did against Oklahoma all year, then it absolutely can be a strength of the team. And I'll go back to something that I said earlier in the show, guys, but like versatility and being able to win. In multiple ways, like being able to run the football and then being able to control opposing offenses is a way to win. Like, I think that Tennessee could win a game 20-14 or 17-14. And I think they could win a game 51-49. You know what I mean? Like, those are going to be very important, you know, attributes for this team moving forward, because, you know, they always say styles make fights. And I don't know if the Tennessee team 2 years ago was able to operate in a game where its offense wasn't scoring on every possession or every other possession. I think this year they're able to operate in a game like that. When they play Georgia, I think that their defense will be able to handle Georgia's offense in a way that, you know, holds them to 20, 24 points. But can they win a game 27-24 against that team this year? Absolutely. Their offensive ability to run the football will give their defense some time to get fresh. And their defense getting after the quarterbacks they're going to face is going to cause turnovers. Like, Jackson Arnold had a turnover issue before this game, but it's no mistake that he turned the ball over 3 times in the first half because he had animals coming at him that he's never had coming at him already. Like, they are a very balanced team, I think. And the defensive line is something that you can fall in love with by watching this football team for a single quarter this year.
You mentioned going into last week that Tennessee was not far behind Georgia and Texas as national championship caliber teams. And you kind of referenced it, you know, earlier in our conversation. After seeing Tennessee in person, maybe a week later, seeing Georgia and all that, how far off, in your estimation at this point in the season, is Tennessee from those national title contenders in Texas and Georgia, or front runners, if you want to call them, Texas and Georgia?
The thing that I will say about teams like Texas, Georgia, Ohio State, when you look around the country, is that you can identify like 12 to 14 players potentially that are in the mix that will eventually be a first round pick. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they have been signing top five classes year over year over year, and then accentuating their rosters with important portal additions. And Tennessee has recruited well, but they have not been recruiting at an elite status for that 4-year period. And last year, Michigan showed us that that's not necessarily a prerequisite to win a national title anymore. But when they face those teams, and they will, like, will they be able to match up with the pure talent top to bottom that those teams have? I don't know that Tennessee is there yet, but instead of it being from 1 to 85, maybe we look at it from 1 to 40, the guys who play, or 1 to 30, the guys who play. I think Tennessee can match up with them, you know, player for player for the most part, at those positions who are on the field. So, you know, injuries were brought up on the show already. I think that they have to stay healthy. I don't know if they have the same type of depth that Georgia can have. Like, Mykel Williams doesn't play, they bring somebody else in. You know, their offensive line, Tate Ratledge, lineman's out. Will they bring someone else in that's played and is probably going to be in the NFL? Yeah, they will. Like, I don't know if Tennessee is at that point yet, but I don't know that there's any team on their schedule or any team in the country that they can't play a 4-quarter football game with.
If Tennessee was at Arkansas this coming weekend, I would tell you that that's absolutely a trap game, but they have the bye. So, thus, you know, you have a nice break. One, to get mm-hmm. a couple of guys healthy, like Hurd and John Campbell. But two, just to kind of reset after the, you know, first third of the season, and then kind of do a reboot here heading into Arkansas. What do you think about that game coming up, you know, a week from Saturday?
Well, I think that the health thing and the body blow thing is important. Like, you go play a big game, you're sore, you're tired. Getting that week off is important. But I also think that this bye week couldn't have come at a more perfect time for Tennessee, because I also think there's an emotional come down from that. Like,
yeah.
You guys know Josh Heupel better than me, but like, watching him get emotional in the post-game locker room like that, like, he doesn't strike me as somebody who gets emotional very often, you know?
Agreed.
And the thing that I really like to see about Tennessee, and I'm not Mr. Disney movie, everybody love everybody all the time guy, but I get the sense that these guys love each other. You know what I mean? And they love their coach. And I wrote a column on Saturday night from the Oklahoma game in the press box about how Hugh Freeze threw his team under the bus. Like, as I'm writing this column, I'm like watching Tennessee, like, say, "I love you, coach," to them, or to Heupel in the locker room. And it's like, man, these guys are like, they wanted this for him. You know what I mean? I think there's something with teams that actually reach their potential and get where they're going. There is something to playing for your brothers and loving your coach and feeling like you're together in something together. So that's a long way of saying, I think it's probably pretty good that they're not playing another game on Saturday. They can get this emotion out of their system. They can reset, feel good about, you know, where they're at, and then attack the following week. Not that they won't practice and try hard this week, but the following week, get back into that game mentality, get ready to go to Arkansas, because Arkansas is a lot better than people think. I cannot believe that they were underdogs against Auburn this past weekend. Vegas was handing out free money this weekend, and now they're playing A&M on a neutral site. I think they're going to get Arkansas at a pretty good point in their schedule too.
Last thing I got right here, and I know this is more of an off-season question, but a third mm-hmm. of the way through the season, seeing everything that he's done so far, then through these four games, and seeing where Tennessee is as a program amongst the college football powers, if you're an AD and you could hire anybody in the country to come coach your football team, how many guys are you calling before you call Josh Heupel?
It is an interesting question to hear right now, because you are also asking at a time in which the two most interesting and respected personalities in the sport are no longer in it, like Nick Saban and Jim Harbaugh. You know, say what you want about Jim Harbaugh and how weird he is. We all know he's weird, but like, he won a national title at Michigan. I don't know that that list is very long, Eric. I haven't thought that through in the sense of, like, I could give you a blanket number, but like, I don't know. I mean, you guys help me out here. Who's somebody that's an automatic? I mean, I think Kirby Smart's an automatic, you know, you call him first. Lincoln Riley isn't who we thought he was when he left Oklahoma right now, and he's got a lot to prove at USC. Ryan Day's lost to his rival 3 years in a row. I don't know who the layup answer for that question is.
Sark,
and Josh Heupel,
maybe in that conversation.
Sark built Texas back up. I think that's probably a pretty good one. But also has won 10 games once in his entire career, and yeah, you know, still has a season right now where there's a ton of expectations and, you know, they have to go meet them. You know, Texas is a different place now under his leadership, though. So I probably would call him first. But, you know, if you're looking for a round number, maybe four, if I could, you know, actually have an hour to think about this, I think it might be four. But Josh Heupel, too. You know, I'm excited and I get excited. I'm very reactive. That's a personality flaw for me and I'm working on it.
And just 3.5 years ago, when we dropped his name out there as the trending candidate, everybody lost their collective minds because, you know, he was known as a guy who couldn't recruit. And, you know,
yeah,
the narrative was the team at UCF was trending away, you know, from, you know, where they were under Scott Frost. And here Frost is out of college coaching and, you know, getting coffee in the NFL and you know, Josh has, you know, found his niche with the people here and, you know, has done a fantastic job putting good staff members around him.
Yeah. And it's also a cautionary tale too, guys, of just like how hard it is to actually hire somebody. Like you have guys who are hiring big names that are slam dunks that everybody just assumes are going to be great. And then they aren't good at all, you know? And then you have guys who are hired, you know, Florida's going to find this out right here, probably here in the next few months, right? Like there's no slam dunk obvious hire for Florida to go after. Right. I mean, I don't know who that guy is. And, you know, even when USC and LSU hired coaches 3 years ago, there were no obvious candidates there for like, here's the guy you go pay a bunch of money to. They had to go out and get people that we wouldn't have thought would have left the places they were already at. So it is about fit. It's about culture. It's about all these things. And the one thing I will say is for my personality trait, there's a long season ahead. Like yep. Josh has a long runway here of games that he has to go win. And I still think they could lose to Alabama and Georgia and make the playoff and make a run. I hope for your sake and people who love Tennessee that doesn't happen. And I would like to see a national championship contender at least go 1-1 in those games. But like Josh Heupel too has a really special team here. And I would like to see before we get into, is he a top five coach in America, like him use the talent that he has on his roster to go win something.
Yeah. And with respect to the team right now, I mean, you're seeing how good they are and you're seeing, you know, how dominant at times they are on both sides of the football. And I think everybody as well, if you watch this team, recognizes, man, this team can be so much better.
They didn't play well on Saturday. Did you think they played well? I thought they didn't play particularly well, and they still like were never in a position to lose.
Yeah, like, I mean, and I think that's even more impressive. I didn't think they blocked well. I didn't think they blocked well specifically at the tackles.
Which goes back to the offensive line.
Yeah. But at the same time, too, being able to be in a position where you go to Oklahoma and probably, you know, Oklahoma's got its flaws, but it's certainly probably a top 25 team and go out on the road in an emotional environment where people first SEC game for Oklahoma, you know, you guys, you were there, you know what it was about, yeah. But to not sweat when you're not playing well, like is almost even more impressive than kicking someone's ass, because when things are going well, it's great. But when things aren't going perfectly and you still are the superior team, that is again, the sign of being able to win a game in a way that maybe, you know, they weren't prepared to or able to do 2 years ago.
Ari, great stuff, man. Again, you can catch Ari on Andy and Ari Monday through Thursday, 9:30 Eastern time on the On3 YouTube channel. They go live late nights on Saturday after games as well when they can. Appreciate you, man. We'll have you back on the show, and we'll see what's in store for the rest of college football.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, and I have pretty high hopes for this team, and it's going to be really exciting to watch. I hope you guys get to watch some football and have some beers this weekend when you're not covering a game and get to, you know, kind of relax a little bit. Thanks for having me on, and it was a pleasure. Hope to do it again soon.
Appreciate it, Ari.
Ari Wasserman on three, and that's going to do it here for this edition of the VolQuest podcast. As always, we thank you for tuning in, getting those mailbag questions for Thursday's show. Brent Hubbs, Rob Lewis, Ari Wasserman, Austin Price, I am Eric Kane. As always, thank you to Exterior Home Solutions for being the presenting sponsor of the show. Pick up that phone and call for a free estimate. That phone number is 865-524-5888. You can visit them online as well at exteriorhomesolutions.com. We'll talk to you guys again on the Thursday morning mailbag podcast. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Tuesday, everybody.
You've been listening to the VolQuest Mailbag Podcast every week right here on VolQuest.